I'm speaking today with Scott Boats, who is running for City Council in at-large number one. Scott, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Charles, the city government does not work for the rest of us in the city. It works well for contractors. It works well for engineers. Of course, it works well for people who make it their livelihood to be in government. And from my perspective, as a lawyer and former municipal court judge, that creates an environment where those groups have an undue and unfair influence on policy in the city. That's
okay.
Our money.
All right. Well, let's talk about the municipal court judge. I saw on your website you were one for 6 years. Tell me a little bit about that experience. What does a municipal court judge do?
In this city, and the municipal courts here, that's the busiest court system in the country. A part-time judge, I work from 4 to 11 at night, so I have my law practice. I would go over to Lubbock, and I hear dockets of several hundred people every night in different languages, and they're Class C misdemeanors. But within Class C misdemeanors will be violations of various city ordinances. But I was appointed twice by Mayor White, once by Mayor Parker. I worked for Judge Mejia for the longest time, and then recently my friend and former boss, Barbara Hartle. But I resigned in March to run for City Council.
So what kind of insight did that experience give you into the workings of city government, and how would that translate to being a City Council member?
Based on what I saw there, and to a degree with my own clientele, permitting in this city is designed primarily to create, perhaps like municipal courts everywhere themselves, sort of a cash cow for government. It's how government exists outside of the traditional, say, a tax, sales tax base, or property tax, or regular taxation, new taxation like Prop 1. But it's not my experience that the regulations in the city are so much designed to encourage entrepreneurs, to encourage business, as to provide a way to tax them. And it's a similar philosophy, I feel, that has infected the red light or the red light cameras, and that philosophy that we're very much in this city into a gotcha form of government, that even the most innocuous form of behavior becomes ripe for taxation. And I understand that times are difficult and government's got to exist. My philosophy is that form of government is wrong, and a form of government where regulations come to be really as a means of limiting competition is also wrong. But I got that insight from being a municipal court judge for 6 years.
So what do you see as being the right way of doing it?
The right way to do it is for government to constantly look at itself. It's hard to say this. A lot of good people lost their jobs in the last few weeks, but government must continually look at itself and cut itself and then cut itself some more. One way to do that efficiently and fairly is to create an ongoing sunset review type commission that alternates with the terms of council and the mayor between ordinances and then departments. For 1-2 year period, the purpose of the recurrent sunset review commission would be to look at the ordinances that are inordinately difficult from my point of view on businesses, and in the next round to deal with the performance of departments. But that's one way to do it, is for government to look at itself, but also to create an environment. Because remember, businesses prosper when there is the right form of regulation. Not when there's no regulation, but when the regulation is actually logical and the regulation is understood by people who want to go into business and it's accessible. The knowledge in terms of, you know, what you have to do to start a business, it's not hidden and it's not overly complicated. But that's the primary focus, is making government here accountable, and we're all better if we're accountable. I'm accountable if I'm better if I'm accountable to my clients or the courts, and you're better if you're accountable to your boss. But accountability and transparency are the two major themes that I have for the campaign.
So given that about two-thirds of the city's budget is public safety, police, fire, emergency, how much of that is that subject to the same philosophy of looking of shrink and look for more ways to shrink?
It is not. I am a traditional fiscal conservative in that regard. There are certain fundamental duties of government, and the most fundamental is to provide a safe and secure environment for us all to live in. This is the budget for the city of Houston. It's over 300 pages. There's room in here to deal with issues other than police and fire. I respect the good and smart and capable people who have worked hard to find ways to reduce expenditures. I do have a philosophy that's a little bit different. I do believe in accountability of government through, for example, sunset commissions and looking hard at what we're doing. Why is almost 10% of our workforce of 22,000 people paid close to $100,000 a year? It's that sort of issue you have to look at. And when people are cut, when jobs are cut, there's more to look at in terms of fairness than simply saying, well, it's unfair to cut city employees. It also has to do with who's making the money, how long have they been making it, and how seriously are they being looked at to be cut. But I know that it's a difficult process. I come from a conservative, somewhat libertarian background. I thought long and hard about how I could help the city in terms of creating an environment that's good for jobs. I do believe in limited regulation. I believe in only necessary and smart regulation. Whether it deals with, you know, tow trucks and the safe clear policy, or making it easier to get a street vendor permit in the city, or whatever, there are things we can do to improve what the city does to make this place a good place for not only individuals like you and me who choose to live here, but for businesses as well. And with the economy as it is, how can you better empower people than to tell them, look, if you lose your job at Continental, or if you lose your job for the city of Houston Neighborhoods Department, this is a city that welcomes entrepreneurs. This is a city that welcomes, will not stand in the way of opportunity. Let's put it that way. Business opportunity, if you lose your job in the traditional employment environment. And that's what we need at the city desperately in this economy.
Okay. What is your assessment of the budget that council passed recently?
We can cut more. And again, I know that Mayor Parker has a challenging job. She appointed she's naming 15 people to a super committee to look at expenditures, and then Ron Green's naming one. I think he ought to name more, and probably the mayor should name fewer. But the point is, in other words, put it more onto the accountability side. Take it, the mayor's office is inherently political. Give more of those appointments to the comptroller, but that's a good process. What it does is it removes the political heat from the people who are standing for election. But Charles, it's all in who gets appointed to the committee. And from my perspective, and I know it's not just me, Karen Durr brought it up in her interview with you, and I have a lot of respect for her, a lot of respect for a lot of the candidates, but it's the notion of access. And so when people talk about, you know, the contractors, the engineers, it's not just like the process of making a regulation. It's who has access to the council. And problems like that are made worse, for example, with the cell phone contract where, you know, the mayor's most recent treasurer was a registered lobbyist for the vendor that got the contract. That stinks to high heaven. It doesn't mean that there's, you know, anybody's necessarily dishonest, but the city's got to get serious, more serious about what we do and how that, the message we send across the city and the businesses who might consider coming here. And that has that sort of theme is also entrenched in my views on Proposition 1.
All right. So I was going to ask about that anyway. I take it you voted against that.
I did vote against Proposition 1.
Tell me your reasoning.
Okay. I have five problems with it. Charles, if you look at the active, it's a serious issue, this issue of wording. I'm a lawyer. I make my living off of words and choosing words. As, you know, a new politician, I'm trying to be more careful and certain about the words I'm using. But that language started out, shall the city of Houston amend the charter, or shall the city charter of the city of Houston be amended? And then it goes on to create a pay-as-you-go fund. to improve and enhance streets and drainage. Charles, it doesn't speak of actually a tax. My problem with that is I don't believe that rational people or any people in this economy would choose to cast a ballot creating a new tax in this economy. It simply speaks of the idea, the smart idea, of having designated or pay-as-you-go type funds, if you will, for different duties of a city. Drainage and streets, for example. But clearly the language is not there. But it's not just that. If you look at the history of the proposition and the funding, I mean, the guys who wanted that raised almost $300,000 in the first month of the declaration of the proposition. I'm trying to raise money for a city council campaign. And you know, you've looked at my finance report. It's hard to do. Those guys put up almost $300,000 in a month. They ended up spending the other people 8-1. And, you know, you look at the contributions. Clearly, it was full employment for, or a form of bailout for local engineers and contractors. I got a letter right here from B.H. Garber Engineers, and this is trying to pay off the debt for Prop 1. And what they speak of is, look, the effort was funded 90% by engineers, 10% by contracting. Well, we're the normal people in that figure, and they admit the proposition miraculously passed and will generate $125 million in engineering and constructing in years to come. Not $125 million, which is ultimately what it does to improve drainage and streets, but it's profits for contractors, and that's the way they're describing it. I have a problem with that. And they talk about, you know, all these companies that put in $20,000 each. Without the amendment, our market would be much slower to correct. That strikes me as being a form of full employment for, or bailout for, local construction, local engineering. I get that. I get why government does that. But the problem with that is inherently you create conflicts with people on council, people who are making policy, through their relationships with, frankly, you know, friends. And somebody who gives you money for a campaign, I will tell you, they are your friend. That's where I raise my money. I've called lawyers, you know, I've called, you know, family members and other people. Friends give you money. Friends give you money for these campaigns too. And so when they have access to counsel, you have that conflict of interest. So, Charles, look, I have a problem with that. I want to modernize government in this city through the Sunset Review Commission. And I want to bring ethics reform to the city, modeled on the city of Philadelphia. It's somewhat related to the way federal policy of policing of contracting works. I got this idea from other people who have been around this issue for a long time. I got the jobs thing from Barry Klein, who's president of the Houston Property Rights Association. These are just people I know, but unanimously, I was at a Sylvester Turner town meeting in Acres Home on Saturday, and preachers were approaching me about this idea that contractors run city policy. And so that's the deal with Proposition 1. It ultimately helps contractors.
Let me jump in here,
yeah,
for a second, if you don't mind. Let's take a step back from that, which, you know, all valid issues. But let's take a step back. Did you agree or disagree with the idea that the Proposition 1 backers put forth, that the mechanism to deal with flooding and drainage in the city was inadequate and that there needs to be more money put into it?
No, I think that there is, in fact, a structure that exists, but there's a turf battle, in my opinion, between the city of Houston and Harris County, and it keeps all of us who live in this region from having the quality of life we could have. The city and the county should be working together on the issue of, you know, drainage and flooding, but also on the issue of providing common benefits or similar benefits to government employees. And I know I noticed in one of the candidate interviews, it may have been Karen Durs again, I don't remember, but that idea is out there, and apparently it's been out there for a long time. Sort of joint government joining forces, at least here, the biggest state and the biggest county in the state, the largest city in the state. I mean, why can't we work together more? Why can't we do something to eliminate duplicative efforts? But the issue of drainage is an example of that. the Harris County Flood Control District and the city working together. Some revenue is important to a city. City cannot work without revenue. It's just that the idea of city leaders sitting down and getting creative about drawing up new sources of revenue or justifications for revenue, I disagree with that, because ultimately what happens in the process, you know, politics is a terribly ugly process, but you start doing favors for interest groups or individuals. And so that's why inherently I am distrustful of creating something new, even if it's something worded almost innocuous like pay-as-you-go fund. Love it. I'm a conservative. Why can't we do that? My household budget is a pay-as-you-go fund. I think most of us live that way. But that's not the way government does it, and it becomes cynical when government sits down and creates a justification for getting new forms of revenue.
And I take it that that's the same objection you had to the red light cameras.
Well, red light cameras are revenue-driven policy, are revenue-driven policing. It can't apply to running a red light. It can apply eventually to speeding, as happens in some municipalities eventually, whether you've got your seatbelt on, whether you're jaywalking. Government can make a lot of money by taxing us or creating a new fee or fine for otherwise innocuous behavior. That's not the society any of us want. I do believe in the slippery slope when it comes to cameras, and that's why I oppose the red light cameras.
All right, but you wouldn't call running a red light an otherwise innocuous behavior, though.
I would not.
Okay. At this point, of course, what's going on with that is essentially a contract dispute.
Yes.
You know, what do you hope to what do you hope is the end result of all this?
I hope that Mayor Parker digs in, and as she's capable of doing, I've seen her do it with other council members. I've watched her back and forth with particular council members. She's quite capable of stating and defending her point of view, and she can do that with these red light camera people. I'll support her in doing that, and I urge her to fight them every step of the way. It's unfortunate that concessions were apparently made on the contract by a prior administration. It's unfortunate that after the vote, maybe there was an opportunity to get out of the contract, but what we have now is simply all that we have now. And I strongly urge her to do what she can to find the most cost-efficient way of getting out of the contract.
Okay. How would you assess Mayor Parker's first term in office so far?
Well, Charles, there's a lot of room for improvement. Let's just put it that way. Mayor Parker appointed me once. And when I was evaluating this race, I met with a good friend of hers. And I've met with other people who have access, more direct access to her than I do. The only problem, I would say, really has to do with the fact that she has such thin skin. And that's a terrible attribute for a politician. Recent council meetings between, say, her and the interaction, say, between her and Jones or her and Bradford, don't bespeak the best of Mayor Parker. I know that she can do better than that. She's a smart, capable administrator and leader, but she's best when she focuses on the reality that she is facing as mayor, the most difficult financial crisis this city has ever faced. If she would maybe expand her horizon to the reality that it looks like, to a degree, there's a system of favoritism involved in the whole process. If she would open up the possibility that maybe she, of all people, could be accused of bias. She, of all people, could be accused of not treating everybody equally. If she could just maybe get her mind around that possibility, she would be a better public servant. She could also draw from, Churchill or somebody and develop a better means of taking a position, a considerate position, a careful position, and sticking with it. It does something for the community itself. There's always something to be said for somebody who's smart enough to change their mind. You thought something was one way when it turned out to be another. If she could maybe hire more local consultants to give her a better idea of how her policies are seen by the community, that would benefit her as well. There's a lot of room for improvement.
You talked quite a bit in this interview about ethics and ethics reform. The city did recently pass an enhanced ethics ordinance. What's your opinion on that, and what do you think needs to be done?
I don't think that members of council who have businesses in the community should... I don't believe that contracts should go to their businesses. Obviously, that's a direct reference to Mr. Costello. I have nothing personal against him, except that, again, the whole system loses legitimacy when it appears that you're making money off of your office. I've watched on council as two or three or four recurrent individuals go before council and ask for the current contracts that he has with the city through not only Costello Engineering, but any other entity. And all I can tell you is that people continue to contact me, who I didn't know before this election, who were enthusiastic about the notion of the idea of the campaign, taking on the author of Prop 1. And it always comes down to ethics and the appearance of conflict of interest. As a judge, briefly during this red light stuff, one of the kuboshes mentioned that, one of the people with ATS was related to another federal judge. And lawyers always go down that path. We always go down that path with the judge. And we may not bring it out, but we're thinking about something. Or even another lawyer. Rule 12 motion to disqualify a lawyer on the basis of they have information that biases the whole situation. Look, it's the appearance. Sometimes it's just the mere appearance of bias, the appearance of profit from public office that is enough to diminish it. And we simply need to do more in this city to stop that. I don't know that it's possible to do anything about it at the federal level or at the state level, maybe not at the county level, but we can start right here, right now, because it is a city. It is the city of Houston. So what we do here, it can make a great impact. It can, I think, change flows up. It doesn't trickle down, but we can change the way ethics in public service is interpreted when members of a legislative body, current or past, go to work for and reap profits from their expertise. So it's not enough. We need to do more.
Okay. And when people go to vote this November, why should they vote to make you the next council member and at-large number one?
They should vote for me because I'm a lawyer who has absolutely no financial relationship whatsoever with the city of Houston. I probate wills. I do some divorces. I do some civil litigation. None of it ever involves the city. I have no conflicting interests. I'm a father of a child who attends a school that is wonderful for her, and she attends that school because she is not well served by public schools. So I understand how people feel out there about government not living up to its end of the bargain on the social contract. There's more that government must do for people other than simply to look at us as a source of revenue for funding government. People ought to vote for me because that's where I come from.
All right. Scott Post, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thank you, Charles.